From the heart of our nation's capital, here's Family Research Council President Tony Perkins.
Welcome to the Monday edition of Washington Watch. I'm Sarah Perry, Director of Partnerships for FRC Action, and it's my privilege to be sitting in for Tony Perkins today. Discrimination is alive and well in the home of the Alamo. Religious discrimination, that is. The San Antonio City Council blocked Chick-fil-A from opening a restaurant in the San Antonio International Airport simply because the restaurant chain has given to the Salvation Army and Fellowship of Christian Athletes, among other Christian charities. I'll be talking with Keisha Russell, an attorney from First Liberty Institute, to discuss the issue. In my second segment, I'll talk about the discrimination in some Democratic congressional offices against prisoners of war of all groups as they replaced the signature black and white POW flags outside their offices with the transgender pride flag. I'll reveal which offices made this lousy decision. At the bottom of the hour, the pro-life movie Unplanned came in fifth this weekend in its opening segment at the box office, which is fairly impressive for a faith-based movie. It depicts the true story of former Planned Parenthood director Abby Johnson becoming a pro-life advocate after witnessing an ultrasound-guided abortion. Plus, Twitter kept unsubscribing pro-lifers who had followed the Unplanned movie on the social media platform. Carrie Solomon and Chuck Konzelman, the co-directors, producers, and writers of Unplanned, join me to discuss. And in my last segment at 42 past the hour, I'll chat with Elizabeth Johnston, the activist mommy, about the upcoming day of mourning in Richmond, Virginia, planned for Saturday, April 6th. You can learn more at dayofmourning.org. She's holding it in response to Virginia Democratic Governor Ralph Northam's affirmation of the legitimacy of infanticide after a botched abortion. Well, on Thursday, March 21st, in a 6-4 vote, the San Antonio, Texas City Council voted against allowing Chick-fil-A to open up a restaurant in the San Antonio International Airport. Now, First Liberty Institute, based in Plano, Texas, has sent a letter to Secretary of Transportation Ellen Chao, asking her to open an investigation into religious discrimination. So to helping me to discuss today is my first guest, Keisha Russell, an attorney with First Liberty Institute, who appeared this morning on Fox and Friends to talk about the story and had a recent op-ed up and running at foxnews.com. Keisha, welcome to Washington Watch.
Thank you so much for having me.
So Texas, as we know, is typically a red state politically, and I never would have anticipated outside of Austin, whose motto is Keep Austin Weird, that something like a Chick-fil-A being banned from giving an equal opportunity to actually perform business in an airport in San Antonio would actually have transpired. So did this decision surprise you in what would ordinarily be considered a red state?
Well, not exactly. I think the work that I've been doing so far shows me that you can never be too careful about, you know, protecting religious liberty these days. And, you know, we just have to remain diligent no matter what state we're in and no matter where we are. It doesn't completely surprise me that it happened in Texas because we do have quite a few religious discrimination cases that came right out of the state, even though it seems like it wouldn't happen because it is considered a red state.
So what prompted First Liberty Institute to write to Secretary of Transportation Elaine Chao? And I must say, for those who have not yet read the letter, it is available on First Liberty Institute's website, an extremely compelling letter. What was the actual preceding circumstance, as it was, that prompted First Liberty to write to Elaine Chao?
Well, you know, this is what we do, and we're really passionate about religious liberty. And this is, you know, this has happened at Chick-fil-A several times that we feel like government entities have discriminated against it because of its religious identity. And we don't feel like federal taxpayers should have to subsidize religious bigotry. And so, you know, when in receiving federal grant money, the city council members agreed not to discriminate on the basis of religion. And so we decided to write that letter to the Secretary of Transportation to see if she would be willing to investigate their actions and, you know, make a statement that this is not the way the government is supposed to treat religious people.
And I actually found it interesting, Keisha, that in your letter to Secretary of Transportation Chao, you make a point of referencing the fact that the city council had decided not to discriminate, and yet they make no bones about public statements held during the course of the debate on this ordinance about the fact that their conduct is discriminatory, naturally without using that particular word, but talking about the fact that this was essentially a company that went against everything that San Antonio stood for. So what were some other elements of what you perceived, and I believe the rest of the American populace ought to perceive, as religious discrimination by the city council against Chick-fil-A?
Well, I mean, the city council members called Chick-fil-A a symbol of hate because of its choices, its charitable choices, the fact that it gives to these other Christian organizations that have statements of faith. And the bottom line is Chick-fil-A serves everybody. And so there's just no reason to ever label them as, you know, some sort of symbol of hate. They are an amazing restaurant, and there's no reason to give them that label. Now, the only one discriminating, it seems, would be the council members at this point, because they've used Chick-fil-A's religious identity and their charitable choices to say that they're not fit to be in an airport.
Now, there's an element also within the letter that discusses not only the possibility of having violated the constitutional rights of Chick-fil-A, mm-hmm. as a corporate actor, a closely held corporation, but also the fact that federal grant money might actually be at stake as well. Can you explain that a bit?
Sure. So whenever, you know, your local government accepts federal grant money, there's certain conditions. And normal conditions, usual common conditions, are that you will not discriminate in, you know, utilizing these grants. You will honor the federal government's laws as it relates to discrimination, and you will, you know, honor that. And the city council members have, in our opinion, you know, reneged on that promise by intentionally discriminating against Chick-fil-A and making these completely derogatory statements about Chick-fil-A's faith.
Now, it's very interesting to me that San Antonio purports to be a welcoming community. And in fact, the city council is bound to the non-discrimination ordinance of San Antonio's own code. And
Obviously
they have held themselves to this purportedly above the fray standard, and yet make a point of going so far out of the way to describe Chick-fil-A as a symbol of hate. One of the council members even compared Chick-fil-A to such a societal ill as a lottery kiosk or an e-cig shop. Is that right?
Mm-hmm. And, you know, if any of your listeners want to read the whole letter, they can go to firstliberty.org to see, you know, the statements that some of the officials made. But, yeah, a lot of them, I mean, just blatantly hostile to the organization. And regardless of the fact that, like I said, Chick-fil-A serves everyone its chicken sandwiches, there's just no reason, you know, to be hostile to them just because they're a Christian organization and they give to Christian companies. We think that, you know, the main thing to remember here is that, you know, all religious, you know, organizations are free to exercise their religion just like any citizen would, and the government has to respect that. And if the city council wants to keep Chick-fil-A out of the airport, it's going to need to have a really compelling interest, and its religion is not a compelling interest.
So to say a little bit about Chick-fil-A here, this is a company that employs over 2,000 people. That is one of the most profitable restaurant chains in the world, behind McDonald's and Wendy's. There is no proof that Chick-fil-A has ever violated any federal employment discrimination law or has made refusal to serve any individual based on their sexual orientation, but rather this is private charitable giving. So essentially, this rises to the level of a type of thought policing by the city council, doesn't it?
Absolutely. If they are wanting to control what Chick-fil-A believes and what it thinks about certain issues, and that's not the way the government is supposed to, you know, conduct itself. Chick-fil-A's beliefs stems out of their religious practices, their beliefs, and their identity as Christians, and they're entitled to, you know, run their business that way. And not to mention, the city council is supposed to be neutral to religion, and it's demonstrating the officials are demonstrating by their statements that they are not neutral and they are very hostile, in fact, to Chick-fil-A because of its religious identity.
So we're now learning that the Chick-fil-A that's present at the Buffalo Niagara International Airport in New York is also coming under fire. Do you anticipate that this is the beginning of a trend? And if so, do each of these circumstances have to be sort of fought individually, case by case? And if not, is there a solution that might be able to prevent these airports from making broad-based discriminatory action against companies like Chick-fil-A?
Well, to answer your first question, I mean, this incident is in Texas with San Antonio, and the other's in New York, so it just depends how Chick-fil-A wants to deal with it. You know, two different lawsuits is probably the best way. But in terms of, you know, sort of trend, I think that Chick-fil-A has been in the situation quite a few times, you know, since Mr. Caffey made his statement a couple years ago about his thoughts about marriage. And so I think, you know, their religious identity has sort of been in the spotlight for a while. And despite that, they've been able to be a really successful corporation. But I think the thing to really remember here is that, you know, Chick-fil-A's religious identity is protected by the law, it's protected by the Constitution, and no government, whether it be in Buffalo or San Antonio, was supposed to deny them generally available benefits, and that includes being able to be in an airport and being able to have their restaurant there. They're not supposed to deny them that ability and that right just because they're religious and they don't care for their religious beliefs.
And it seems also that First Liberty Institute and Chick-fil-A had a friend in Ken Paxton, who's the Attorney General of Texas, and he wrote his own individual letter to Secretary Chao as well. And the basis for what he mentioned was precisely what First Liberty did so well in their own letter. But are you encouraged by the fact that as AG, he decided to write his own letter on this?
Absolutely, because I think the more that we have, you know, people supporting Chick-fil-A and supporting all religious, you know, organizations, the better it is for especially the public to realize that it's not just First Liberty as a religious liberty organization saying this, but you have, you know, the Attorney General of Texas saying that this is wrong and this is a violation of their constitutional rights and a violation of federal law. I think we also have his letter as well on firstliberty.org, but we're definitely, you know, grateful that he has chimed in and has decided to say something about this, because at this point it's just, you know, getting outrageous, you know, the way Chick-fil-A is being treated.
Well, we will be watching this case very carefully. We extend our greatest thanks to the great work that First Liberty Institute does, particularly you as well, Keisha. Thanks for joining me today. You have been listening to Washington Watch with Tony Perkins. I'm Sarah Perry, sitting in for Tony Perkins today. Coming up next, some Democratic congressional offices removed the prisoner of war flags outside their offices and replaced them with, get this, pink and blue transgender pride flags. I'll be discussing that and more after the break. You're listening to Washington Watch with Tony Perkins.
Picture it. Majestic beauty all around you. Wildlife, deep blue waters, glacial mountains, lush forests. Can you imagine the majesty of creation at every turn? Discover Alaska with FRC. You'll enjoy every moment of this unforgettable experience. Juno, accessible only by sea and air. Ketchikan and its impressive collection of Native American totem poles. Glacier Bay, a breathtaking wonder. All this, plus a behind-the-scenes look at what Family Research Council is doing in our nation's capital. You'll hear directly from FRC President Tony Perkins, General Jerry Boykin, and Michelle Bachmann. This is no ordinary vacation. You'll be vacationing with the FRC family and a lot of new friends. Be rejuvenated as we deepen our relationships with God and each other. Don't just get away. Get away with purpose on Family Research Council's Alaska Cruise, July 7th through 14th. Call 844-872-5155 to register today or visit us online at frc.org/Alaska.
Happy birthday to you.
In states like New York, Virginia, and Vermont, radical legislation has been written legalizing abortion late in pregnancy, when babies can feel pain and are able to live outside the womb.
Happy birthday to you.
They've gone even further, repealing protections of infants born alive, allowing killing even after birth.
Happy birthday to you.
Congress has yet to protect the life of every newborn baby. Visit endbirthdayabortion.com to send Nancy Pelosi a newborn hat to show Congress every new life should be welcomed with warmth and love, not hate, not death. End birthday abortions. Visit endbirthdayabortion.com.
Happy birthday to you.
Paid for by Family Research Council.
Your email inbox is probably filled with a lot of free stuff these days. Free is good, but most of our email ends up being free spam. If you want a healthier diet in your inbox, add Tony Perkins' Washington Update newsletter to your email menu. This daily update from Family Research Council is our flagship publication, an update with the latest pro-family take on Washington's hottest issues. The update goes beyond the headlines and examines what is really going on in our culture and politics from a biblical perspective. Are evangelicals showing up at the polls? Are faith-based adoption providers persecuting same-sex couples? The left and the media love to answer these questions for you. Let FRC remove the spin and give you real answers with the Washington Update. To subscribe to this free daily newsletter and to subscribe to other free resources, go to frc.org/connect. That's frc.org/connect.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm Sarah Perry, Director of Partnerships for FRC Action. It's my privilege to be sitting in for Tony Perkins today. Last week, the Washington Free Beacon wrote a fascinating piece entitled Democrat Offices Remove POW Flags and Replace with Transgender Pride Flags. Probably not the first we'll be hearing of this story. I know it certainly is not the last. I'd like to devote a segment today to a conversation with you as the listener. These changes came at the urging of the National Center for Transgender Equality, which is delivering flags to congressional offices in advance of yesterday's International Transgender Day of Visibility. They tweeted about the same the week of March 26th, but only a few of them decided that they would put the flags out. This is a fact that needs to be remembered as we begin this segment. Those who did not put out the flag or replace the POW flag ought to be commended for standing firm in the face of what is clearly a politically partisan onslaught. Among the members who made the switch were Representative Kim Schreier, the Democrat from Washington, who replaced her flag. She tweeted, "As a proud member of the LGBTQ caucus, I will do everything I can to make sure transgender people won't be erased by violence, fear, or prejudice. I am committed to safety and equality for all. Hashtag Trans Visibility Week." Schreier's office told the Washington Free Beacon that the POW flag had not been removed permanently, but simply put inside her office for the time being. Staffers from the office of Representative Pete Aguilar, the Democrat from California, were spotted attempting to pull their office's POW flag out of its stand on Wednesday of last week, and a source from his office said that they had initially tried to remove the POW flag, but were unsuccessful, managing to remove it later. Representative Tim Ryan, the Democrat from Ohio, replaced the POW flag with the transgender flag during the same week. And in fact, the offices for Aguilar and Ryan did not respond to additional requests for comment. As I'm sure it does not surprise any of you, some of the other offenders replacing the POW flag with the baby blue and pink transgender flag included House Speaker Nancy Pelosi, Democrat of California, Representative Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, the socialist darling out of New York, and Representative Jennifer Wexton, Democrat from Virginia. A Republican office on the Hill reached out to the Washington Free Beacon to say that it was also asked to replace its POW flag with the transgender pride flag, but that the change was not made. Representative Adam Smith, Democrat from Washington, placed the transgender pride flag and the POW flag next to one another without replacing the POW flag. He tweeted, "During Trans Visibility Week, I join in solidarity with transgender constituents in Washington 09 and transgender people across the country. In the halls of Congress, we should always remember our commitment to safety and equality for everyone. My office is welcome and open to all." Likewise, Democratic Representative Ann Kirkpatrick from Arizona hung up the transgender pride flag on her door and left the POW flag displayed, saying, "Similarly, I'm proud to hang the transgender pride flag on our door." The American Legion took issue with the fact that many Democratic representatives had removed the POW flag and replaced it, as previously reported. In fact, just on the 29th, 2 days before the International Trans Visibility Day, the American Legion displayed this statement. "According to several media reports, some members of Congress replaced POW MIA flags that were displayed outside their Capitol Hill offices with transgender equality banners." This comment was issued by commander of the American Legion, Brett Rystad, who went on to say, "We take no issue with members of Congress honoring additional groups, but it should be in addition to rather than instead of our heroes, many of whom made the ultimate sacrifice for our country. These servicemen and servicewomen went missing while defending all Americans. Their flags should not go missing as well. The American Legion urges every member of Congress to honor these heroes by ensuring the POW MIA flag is properly and permanently displayed outside their offices." It bears noting that the American Legion has a membership of over 2 million wartime veterans and was founded in 1919 on pillars such as national security, veterans affairs, patriotic youth programs, and Americanism, which says something about the exceptional nature of an organization like the American Legion, but more specifically about the exceptional nature of the American populace. And in fact, when we start promoting one special interest group above those interests of all Americans, we have suddenly given ourselves over to the opprobrium that we have for so long said was coming, which is thought policing and bending to the wills of socialist progressivism. Notice that among the list of offenders, Nancy Pelosi, Senator Bernie Sanders, and Representative Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, those who fall in line with a more socialist agenda, two of whom have identified specifically as socialists, have indicated, have played their hand, so to speak, in which groups they prefer to honor. The fact that they took the time and effort to replace a POW MIA flag representing those who have fallen in war, who are missing from war, with a special interest comprising a minuscule percent of the American populace, many of whom who are struggling and ought to be prayed for with the issue of gender dysphoria, says so much about the fact that you, listeners, should be able to go out in the 2020 season and make sure to vote your values. You're listening to Washington Watch with Tony Perkins. I am Sarah Perry, in for Tony today. Coming up next, Twitter kept unsubscribing pro-lifers who had followed the unplanned movie debuting this weekend on the social media platform. Carrie Solomon and Chuck Konzelman, the co-directors and writers of Unplanned, joined me to discuss.
Oh,
Grandpa Jerry, what are you doing?
What? What does it look like I'm doing? I'm sitting on this bench enjoying my tea and reading the news.
You always tell me that I need to stand firm for faith, family, and freedom. Why aren't you standing?
Well, now with this new Stand Firm app, I can sit and stand at the same time. And if you got the Stand Firm app, you could learn something besides that garbage of peddling in public schools. You could listen to Washington Watch with Tony Perkins, where Tony and leaders on the Hill and other culture influencers weigh in on current events. You can read FRC's latest publications and articles responding to what's going on in the news, like this.
Oh.
You can play trivia and earn points for free prizes. You can even access all of FRC's publications directly to sharpen your mind and give you the ability to discern the thoughts and intentions of the heart.
I can be a mind reader?
Kid, that's from the Bible, the richest piece of literature on God's green earth.
Can I see this stand up? Wow, this would keep me informed. Visit frc.org/app to download FRC's Stand Firm app.
Your email inbox is probably filled with a lot of free stuff these days. Free is good, but most of our email ends up being free spam. If you want a healthier diet in your inbox, add Tony Perkins' Washington Update newsletter to your email menu. This daily update from Family Research Council is our flagship publication, an update with the latest pro-family take on Washington's hottest issues. The update goes beyond the headlines and examines what is really going on in our culture and politics from a biblical perspective. Are evangelicals showing up at the polls? Are faith-based adoption providers persecuting same-sex couples? The left and the media love to answer these questions for you. Let FRC remove the spin and give you real answers with the Washington Update. To subscribe to this free daily newsletter and to subscribe to other free resources, go to frc.org/connect. That's frc.org/connect.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm Sarah Perry, sitting in for Tony Perkins today. Well, a firestorm was ignited late on Sunday after scores of people began reporting that they were unable to follow the pro-life movie Unplanned, which hit theaters over the weekend. In fact, it hit at number 5 on the box office, very impressive for a faith-based film, and depicts the true story of former Planned Parenthood director Abby Johnson becoming a staunch pro-life advocate after witnessing an ultrasound-guided abortion. Here to discuss Twitter and the movie with me are Carrie Solomon and Chuck Konzelman, the co-directors, producers, and writers of Unplanned. Carrie and Chuck, welcome to Washington Watch.
Thank you very much.
Thank you for having us.
And we actually, when the horse race was finally done, we actually hit number 4 for the weekend. We
oh, fabulous.
Yeah, who they thought was ahead of us did a little worse, and so we wound up as number 4.
Excellent news. And for those of you listening, go to unplannedmovie.com for information on where to see the film and to purchase tickets. We want as many people as possible to go see the film because the longer it is in theaters, the more people get to see it and your attendance matters. In fact, Vice President Mike Pence tweeted over the weekend, "So good to see movie theaters across the country showing Unplanned Movie, a deeply inspiring new pro-life film based on the best-selling book by Abby Johnson." Were you surprised that the vice president tweeted your movie over the weekend?
You know, you always get surprised when somebody of that stature weighs in on a subject. But honestly, even when we were shooting on set, you know, we had this feeling that it was going to go all the way to the top. I believe that the president is going to eventually see the film and he'll tweet out as well. You know, because the subject demands that. This is the most controversial issue and the most important issue of our time. So, I mean, how could they not weigh in?
Absolutely. Well, late on Sunday, thousands of people were noting that every time they tried to follow the movie's account on Twitter, they were automatically unfollowed. Did you become aware of this during that entire firestorm, or did someone mention it to you afterward?
We woke up initially on Saturday morning and found out that our account had been suspended, and actually had been suspended on the night of our release. So that was kind of rough. Mm. And then the following day, we had gone from, you know, pre-release between 4,000 and 7,000 followers to 231,000 followers, and then suddenly we had none. So that wasn't too much fun. But, you know, it really wasn't a surprise because, you know, we just found out today that Google had blocked our ads, our banner ads in the week up to release. We had a number of networks that wouldn't take us on cable, Up Network, Lifetime, Hallmark. We've been blocked from all these areas of advertising. The MPAA had effectively eliminated our most effective line of advertising, which is a trailer before other movies, by tagging us with an R rating, despite no nudity, no violence other than that of the abortion, no profanity. That meant that we couldn't advertise our film with a trailer other than before other R-rated movies, which really aren't our audience. So we're seeing a concerted effort. Someone asked if it was collusion. I said, no, it's not collusion. All these sources are of the same mind. So it's kind of like approaching 1,000, you know, deeply bigoted racists. They don't have to collude to all do the wrong thing. They'll all do it the wrong thing individually and on their own.
Oh, that's a great statement. Well, you got a lot of attention from very high-level individuals. Actress Patricia Heaton tweeted about it. Lila Rose, who's the founder and president of Live Action, tweeted about it as well. Attorney Harmeet Dhillon, who is the former president of the Republican Attorneys Association, tweeted that Twitter is censoring your movie. And I'm hoping that you did what I did, which is when I saw it and we recognized that there was an issue, when the block was removed, you could say other people were aware of this. But do you have any individual recourse against Twitter? And do you have plans to utilize this in a format in the future?
Well, I think, you know, the court of public opinion has run against them in this thing. You know, immediately we had Lila Rose on there. Among the other people who noticed that we've been cut off was Shannon Bream over at Fox. Dana Loesch noted. So I think that whoever was trying to curb our efforts, I think it kind of backfired on them. I think that part of the reason for this is that the film was already having a disproportionate amount of political reach beyond where it should be. Even before our release, we aired for the Georgia State Legislature before their heartbeat vote. We know we changed some votes in the Senate. We believe we probably changed some votes in the House. And while we were at a conference on Friday, they took the vote there. It passed 92-78, which seems pretty resounding on the surface of it. But to be enacted into law, apparently they needed 91 votes, which I believe is one more than half the Georgia House. So I think the motion might have failed without it. And the governor there, Brian Kemp, has actually invited Ashley Bratcher, our lead actress, to stand beside him as he signs the heartbeat bill into law. And I think we're going to see this duplicated across the country. So, you know, what we're seeing over and over again is a number of people who are either on the fence or pro-choice. They go into this movie that way. They come out very much pro-life.
This is such a compelling story based on where we are in the national landscape and the preponderance of the state-level bills that are taking place right now that are bringing this issue to the forefront. There has never been a better time for a movie like this. Carrie Solomon and Chuck Konzelman, the co-directors, producers, and writers of Unplanned, have been my guests today. Go find out more about the film and purchase tickets at unplannedfilm.com. You're listening to Washington Watch. I'm Sarah Perry in for Tony Perkins. Coming up next, Elizabeth Johnston, better known as the activist mommy, will come and talk to me about the upcoming Day of Mourning in Richmond, Virginia on Saturday, April 6th. We'll be right back on Washington Watch.
Picture it. Majestic beauty all around you. Wildlife, deep blue waters, glacial mountains, lush forests. Can you imagine the majesty of creation at every turn? Discover Alaska with FRC. You'll enjoy every moment of this unforgettable experience. Juno, accessible only by sea and air. Ketchikan and its impressive collection of Native American totem poles. Glacier Bay, a breathtaking wonder. All this, plus a behind-the-scenes look at what Family Research Council is doing in our nation's capital. You'll hear directly from FRC President Tony Perkins, General Jerry Boykin, and Michelle Bachmann. This is no ordinary vacation. You'll be vacationing with the FRC family and a lot of new friends. Be rejuvenated as we deepen our relationships with God and each other. Don't just get away. Get away with purpose on Family Research Council's Alaska Cruise, July 7th through 14th. Call 844-872-5155 to register today or visit us online at frc.org/Alaska.
Happy birthday to you.
In states like New York, Virginia, and Vermont, radical legislation has been written legalizing abortion late in pregnancy, when babies can feel pain and are able to live outside the womb.
Happy birthday to you.
They've gone even further, repealing protections of infants born alive, allowing killing even after birth.
Happy birthday to you.
Congress has yet to protect the life of every newborn baby. Visit endbirthdayabortion.com to send Nancy Pelosi a newborn hat to show Congress every new life should be welcomed with warmth and love, not hate, not death. End birthday abortions. Visit endbirthdayabortion.com.
Happy birthday to you.
Paid for by Family Research Council.
Your email inbox is probably filled with a lot of free stuff these days. Free is good, but most of our email ends up being free spam. If you want a healthier diet in your inbox, add Tony Perkins' Washington Update newsletter to your email menu. This daily update from Family Research Council is our flagship publication, an update with the latest pro-family take on Washington's hottest issues. The update goes beyond the headlines and examines what is really going on in our culture and politics from a biblical perspective. Are evangelicals showing up at the polls? Are faith-based adoption providers persecuting same-sex couples? The left and the media love to answer these questions for you. Let FRC remove the spin and give you real answers with the Washington Update. To subscribe to this free daily newsletter and to subscribe to other free resources, go to frc.org/connect. That's frc.org/connect.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm Sarah Perry, sitting in for Tony Perkins today. Well, here we are in an era where a pro-life film is being suspended for reasons unknown on Twitter during its opening weekend. So there is no one better to discuss the next issue with me related to abortion than Elizabeth Johnston, also known as the Activist Mommy. She'll be talking to me today about the upcoming Day of Mourning in Richmond, Virginia, and has a new book out entitled Not on My Watch, How to Win the Fight for Faith, Family, and Freedom. April 6th is the second of the two Day of Mourning events that Elizabeth has organized, and it's a response to Virginia Democratic Governor Ralph Northam's affirmation of nothing short of infanticide after a botched abortion. Elizabeth, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Thank you so much. It's an honor to be with you.
So let's talk about this event and the National Day of Mourning that you were organizing overall. First, this is not the first one in the history of the organization. In other words, you had one earlier in New York this year, didn't you?
That's right. Last month, after actually in February, after Governor Cuomo and the radical feminists lit up the World Trade Center pink in celebration of infanticide, the citizens of not only the state of New York, but our entire nation were just absolutely outraged and asking, what can we do? What can we do about this 46 years of bloodshed, child killing in our nation? And, you know, we believed that the right response would be a time of mourning and repentance. This is not the first time that a nationwide fast has been called in our country. There have been different times, like Abraham Lincoln and George Washington and others have called fasts. And we are calling on the nation to wear black, fast and pray, and repent for the sin of abortion. And in Albany, New York, we had almost 4,000 in attendance and 40,000 watching all at the same time via live stream as we touched the heart of God and repented and mourned over 46 years of bloodshed in which the church has been quite too silent.
Now, I love the fact that you had such an incredible turnout in New York, which so many of us recognize for being the democratically held state that it is. Were you surprised by that kind of a turnout in New York?
I really wasn't. My inboxes were all slammed after Governor Cuomo signed this diesel legislation. Everyone wanted to know what they could do. People were ready to get off of the sidelines and on the front lines of culture. And I was also not surprised because, you know, New York City and its values does not represent the values of all of the state of New York. And there are a lot of people, a lot of wonderful Americans and believers all around the state of New York who are fed up with the, you know, radical Marxist beliefs of the New York City elite being foisted upon them in their state. And probably the loudest applause that we got at the Day of Mourning event in New York was when one of the speakers just in passing commented about their the rest of New York seceding from the state of New York. And so that told us right there what kind of people we had with us. But it was the most powerful event, I cannot tell you. And we have got powerful speakers lined up for this Saturday. An 8-year-old adoption advocate named Blythe, whose mother almost aborted her, was considering abortion and was adopted. Bishop E.W. Jackson, who actually ran against Governor Northam for office, will be speaking. He's going to bring the house down. David and Jason Benham, the Benham brothers, myself, I'll be speaking. Dr. Ron Archer, whose mother's pimps tried to abort him many times, and he survived. He will be sharing, and is a powerful minister of the gospel. And so it is going to be an amazing time. If the listeners will go to dayofmourning.org, they can get their free Eventbrite ticket to come to the event.
Oh, wow. This sounds like an incredible event. Now, because you started in New York, understanding what was happening with Governor Cuomo's
right.
statements and understanding also what Ralph Northam has said, are you planning, if this propensity toward the state-level, highly aggressive pro-abortion bills continue, to hold events in as many cities as warrant them?
If the Lord provides funding for us, so we are going to continue to follow this cloud. He has sent manna from heaven, you know, almost literally it feels like, for us to do these two events in Albany, New York, and Richmond, Virginia. If he continues to provide funding, we are going to continue to take this city by city, state by state, because you see what the left is doing. They're doing what we should be doing. They're going state by state, and they're saying, okay, if the Supreme Court is going to endanger our chances to execute babies, we are going to make sure that that right is protected. Mm-hmm. We should be going, as God's people, state by state, and saying, if the Supreme Court is not going to do their duty, then we are going to protect these babies by love and by law, and we should be abolishing abortion state by state. And so we are going to take this movement of repentance state by state, because God has told us in 2 Chronicles 7, if my people who are called by my name will humble themselves and pray and seek my face and turn from their wicked ways, then I will hear from heaven and will forgive their sins and heal their land. Doesn't that sound like an equation to you? If you do this, I will do this. So we are trusting God to heal our land, grant us revival as we humble ourselves. Listen, there's no ego in that room. What I experienced in Albany was so powerful. You had all of these amazing speakers, and there they were. No one was selling their books. No one was talking about themselves, really. It was just all about getting on our hands and knees before the Lord and crying out to him to heal our land. You do not want to miss this event in Richmond, Virginia this Saturday.
So to hear you talk about it, the Day of Mourning, and there is really no shortage of pro-life activist movements nationwide. And thankfully, we have seen increased dialogue over what one would have thought decades ago would never have been a controversial statement, which is, we will make a decision after the child survives the abortion and confer with the woman and the doctor. Never in a million years, I know you and I feel the same way on this, we are both mothers, that this ever would have gotten to a point where we would have heard an elected official advocate for infanticide. So there is no shortage, thankfully, of activist movements that are driven toward fighting this radical agenda. But it sounds to me like there is a difference between your movement, which is really about individual culpability. It is really about what we have been neglect in doing, as opposed to making a political statement about how we disagree with another person. Is that an accurate assessment?
It is. And I want to make sure that everyone understands at the day of mourning, we believe, leadership believes in protecting these babies by law. However, this movement is not a horizontal response, is not a political response. This is a very vertical response because we have to admit that something is very wrong with our hearts when we are so savage that we would be celebrating infanticide. When we are that monstrous and savage, we've got to get the heart of God. And when churches and pastors are silent in the face of this savagery, we better have a vertical response and get on our faces before God and repent for our apathy and our silence and our sin. So as the church, we are owning this. You're right, this is different. This is not a march. This is not a pep rally. This is not a fundraiser. You won't see baskets and us, you know, collecting funds, and you won't see us promoting ourselves at this event. We are saying no more ego, no more personalities, no more fundraising off of the backs of these babies. We are simply crying out to God to give us his heart. And I pray that all of your listeners will go to dayofmourning.org and see how they can support us, how they can get their free tickets to come. You want to be in this room in Richmond, Virginia on Saturday to feel and experience and hear the crying and the mourning taking place that we experienced in Albany, New York. It was incredible.
So how does something like this, how does the Day of Mourning come to fruition? What's involved in organizing such a massive event in what is really sort of a relatively short period of time as far as event planning goes?
I am a homeschool mom, okay? I have 10 children. I have no big organization with funding. We have literally stepped out of a boat like Peter did and said, Lord, help us to walk on water here. When the thing happened with Cuomo, we knew we had to respond fast while the righteous anger was hot amongst the people. And so we only had 3 weeks to plan that event, and almost 4,000 people showed up. And it was held at a convention center. You know, if you know anything about event planning, you know what an absolute miracle that was.
Oh,
and
yes.
Here we have done it again. Here we have done it again with 5 weeks. We have gone to Richmond, Virginia, and rented a very expensive convention center there. You can donate. The expenses go straight to help us fund the venue expenses there. We do not have some fund where we are enriching ourselves off of this. We're simply paying for one event and moving on to the next event and paying for that one and moving on to the next event to bring this movement of repentance and mourning all across the nation.
So if
we are trusting God. To answer your question, we are just trusting God, and he has met our needs. We don't have any kind of abundance of resources, but he makes sure that we get the manna that we need.
Isn't that how he always does it? He does delight in giving us what we need when we need it and not a day earlier, I have found.
Yes, ma'am.
So yes, if people cannot attend in person, are you going to live stream it online? I heard you say that you can also give to cover some of the costs of renting the Richmond, Virginia Convention Center, which I know is exorbitant. These are not cheap venues. So in addition to giving online, what are some other ways to participate for people who can't physically be there in person?
There are also local live stream events where you can connect with believers, attend a church or an event where they're hosting our live stream. They will have our live stream link, and you will see at the bottom of our website, dayofmourning.org, you'll see at the bottom of the website a list of cities that are live streaming our event. If you click on that city, then it will lead you to that event and all the details that you need. And so if you can't make it to Richmond, although I want to encourage you to pile up in your car and do so, please get to one of those local events.
So I want to switch gears just a little bit because you are known as the activist mommy and you are a woman who has achieved much with the platform that she has been given. So I want to talk a little bit about the book that you've just authored, Not on My Watch. What was the concept behind this book and what is it that you want readers to take away from your work?
I really wanted to inspire just everyday ordinary Americans and moms and dads and grandparents that if they would just use their voice and be willing to be a little bit hated for the name of Christ and not be bullied by the tactics of the left, that God can use them in amazing ways to do great things for him. And I'm just getting so many amazing reports and responses from around the world of people saying, I am done sitting on the sidelines. I read your book and I am running for office, or I am running for school board, or I'm dealing with the transgender bathroom situation in my city. It's been so amazing to see ordinary people get off of the sidelines and on the front lines of this culture war, because our kids are the target in this radical Marxist culture war. And if we love them, we better say not on my watch.
So of all of the stories that you have sort of helped to represent, the platforms that you've given to the individuals who are themselves struggling with what kind of a difference they themselves as a single individual, and I know that there are moms and dads out there listening right now who would so benefit from what it is you can say to them. How would you encourage someone who is, for example, another mom with school-age kids who thinks, for example, that she cannot conceivably make a difference in her own kitchen or with her own children? What would you say to that woman?
Oh, well, for instance, when Teen Vogue started encouraging our children to sodomize one another in their fashion magazine, my husband and I made a little bonfire in my backyard. I burned Teen Vogue magazine and put it online, and that got viewed 15 million times, went viral, and we started Operation Pull Teen Vogue, in which an ordinary homeschool mom who doesn't even get Teen Vogue magazine, of course, for my children, 5 months later, we shut down Teen Vogue magazine. They were no longer in print 5 months later. Mm-hmm. If you will just use your voice and your passion, and you know what that thing is that God made you passionate about, that he's laid on your heart. Maybe you're supposed to be going outside of an abortion clinic and praying with your family, taking your children out, which is what you see in the Unplanned movie that so many are watching right now. They witness the power of Christians just showing up outside of the abortion clinic and praying. Whatever that thing is God has laid on your heart, would you be obedient to God in that thing? You will be amazed at how God will use you mightily.
Isn't it amazing how full of scripture the stories are just replete with individuals who believe themselves to be incapable of doing something so spectacular, smaller than average heroes, and young men with a slingshot full of rocks. It's amazing to me how often God uses those who feel small and incompetent and incapable to actually provide the truth and give them the platform that they so desperately need to change the culture for the better for Christ. Elizabeth, we wish you all the best. We will encourage people to go to dayofmourning.org Saturday, April 6th in Richmond, Virginia at the Convention Center. For more information about today's guests or to find the podcast for today's program, go to tonyperkins.com. Follow Tony on Twitter at T Perkins. You can follow me on Twitter as well at Sarah P. Perry. And we will see you next time on Washington Watch.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is powered by the Family Research Council and is entirely listener-supported. For more information on anything you've heard today, or to find out how you can partner with us in our ongoing efforts to promote faith, family, and freedom, visit tonyperkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our watch line at 1-866-472-5787. 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.